or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
All right.
Good morning, listeners. Chuck, Cindy, you guys should be on.
Here we are. So
perfect.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chuck, you're coming in super broken. It sounds like you're pretty far away. Yeah, it sounds like we're listening to one of the Jetsons robots.
How about now?
That's better.
All right, cool. Yeah, so 41 degrees there in Fairbanks, and as we know, the snow is starting to melt, so also be careful because it's still getting a little chilly at night, and the risk will freeze back up, so watch out for those icy spots out there, ladies and gentlemen. As always, if you have any questions, please feel free to call in. That's 458-TALK, 907-458-8255. You can also live stream the show by going to KFARradio.com, click on that big orange ball that says Listen Live, and then also remember we do have apps for this. You can always go to the Google Android store and download the KFAR radio app and also the iPhone store. So, cool. Matt, what you got? Real quick before we start, anything? New developments?
I'm having a great day. There are some new developments, though, with the ATF and their new director with their summaries of regulations. And, you know, surprisingly enough, things either pretty much stayed the same, and there's a few things that look to be getting better. Yeah, I'm very surprised. There's 19 to 20 things in their updated regulations or removals, and this by far might be the only thing the ATF has done that people are actually agreeing with.
Yeah, I know. I saw that too, and I was like kind of perusing through it, and it's like, I don't think a lot of those things have impact on anybody. There's just a lot of make me feel good crap. So, anyways, let's get the show started. A well-regulated militia. Being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. All right, some friendly reminders. Remember, the Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program will be May 14th, 5:30 to 7 over at TVSA Range. That's 1730 to 1900 for you military folk or prior military folk, so keep it in context for you. Obviously, it wouldn't be at 5:30 in the morning, but you never know. That's over at 1230 TVSA Way. That's the Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program. Let's see, TBSA range every Thursday from 6 to 8. Remember, cost is only $5 for members. You can go on there and get your annual membership for $125, annual family memberships, and you can also get lifetime memberships over there as well at TBSA. And then they, nice enough, have annual memberships for juniors. So I thought that was pretty cool. So once again, cost is only $5 for members to public shoot over at TBSA range on Thursdays from 6 to 8. So cool. Last but not least, C4 Training Group is hosting the Active Self-Protection Skills Summit in Fairbanks, June 20th and 21st. There's a lot of slots still available to sign up on that show, for that program. It's going to be pretty cool. The exclusive training event is designed to sharpen your defensive skills using ASP, that's Active Self-Protection, evidence-based techniques. Okay, I know that's all kind of the catchphrase now, but here's what they've done. They've gone through and looked at a ton of videos involving armed citizens and also law enforcement. And they've taken a lot of skill sets that they've noticed that are either not used and they remove them from the training program because nobody's going to use them anyways, or they've added stuff in that makes sense because they actually were using gunfire. So I thought that was pretty cool. And Matt could add to that later on in the program when we talk about the pistol, rifle, and shotgun defensive uses. Regardless, this is going to be a two-day professional instruction with Neil Widener and Chris B. Just go to our website, you can find the link, or you can go directly to activeselfprotection.com/shop to sign up for that course. The ACHP for May 16th and 17th is sold out. So if you want to, you can go ahead and email us over at c4tgllc@gmail.com, or you can just go to our website at c4traininggroup.com. Click on contact us and just put yourself on a wait list. How's that sound? We will be doing a carbine class, so a defensive rifle class, this July 25th and 26th. It's going to be out at the Fox Range. We're going to cover the basic operation, maintenance, employment, malfunction, clearance drill, strategies for home defense. For the most in common use, and that's the Supreme Court's words, common use rifle in our nation. So on July 26th, the class will go beyond the basics and cover tactics and drills that will keep you and your family safe and basically allow you to be more of an asset, not a liability, right? So when the crap kind of hits the fan, you're not going to, like, throw up in a little ball and urinate on yourself. You're going to be able to, like, step up to the occasion and defend your family and yourself and maybe some other people. So, all right, Matt, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, one, I think back to the ASP thing, like, we keep talking about it, but it is really such an amazing experience that, you know, they're coming up here and are going to be teaching and bringing to light new things that maybe the students didn't know, things that we didn't know because we don't know everything, and then just everyone working and learning, and I think it's going to be really fun. And then with our carbine class, there's going to be some really interesting things going on there as well. So just if you're listening and you think you've hit your plateau of where you're just the definition of perfection and you can't get any better, I'll tell you right now, you're wrong. You can always get better. You can always try harder, train harder, and train better. And, you know, we're here to offer that for you. And I think this is going to be a really good class, and I feel like you're definitely going to want to take it. I mean, if I was in a class right now, I'd be stomping my foot. But, you know, you're going to want to show up. You're going to want to be there, and you're going to want to learn more. We're always learning more. So, you know, it shouldn't stop you from learning more as well. But that's what I got, Chuck.
Yeah, no, and, you know, you're spot on. This is not like a regular rifle class. This isn't just some chuckleheads and they're talking about NRA rifle. No, this is guys who have taught at the Alaska State Trooper Academy, have taught, like, at other countries, taught other countries' armies how to utilize a rifle for defensive and offensive purposes, obviously.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like, this isn't just some PowerPoint dude, like, you know, 400-pound Navy gravy SEAL guy going to be out there teaching this stuff. These are, we're legit. Like, we've taught this stuff at multiple levels. So your instructors are going to be dialed in on this, and it is a really good class.
And for someone who may be listening, you may think, like, well, I've taken classes, and they're all copy and paste. I could say our classes are leagues ahead of a lot of what you can get, you know, for the same thing, but we're not reinventing the wheel, but we are teaching new things as they come out after we've demoed them, after we've trained on them ourselves, gotten the data to back it up, seeing what works and what doesn't. Like, we are constantly vetting ourselves before it even gets to you. So don't think that you're going to show up and it's going to be some cookie cutter rifle class that you've been to 1,000 times. Like, just understand that we are doing the best we can to make ourselves better in order to help facilitate and train and make you guys better. So that's what we're here for.
Absolutely. And it's great value for the amount of money too.
Yeah, it really is. You cannot get as much out of a class for this price anywhere else other than with us. So I think it's really good.
Yeah. This Week in Firearms History, April 30th is actually a significant day.
The most significant outside of July 4th.
The most.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a testament to freedom right here. April 30th, 1981, Gaston Glock files the Austrian patent for the Glock 17 pistol. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, on April 30th, 1981, on this date, Austrian engineer and an entrepreneur, Gaston Glock filed a key patent application, along with other related filings, for what became the Glock 17, the pistol that launched an entire firearms empire and redefined modern hand design. You know, it's kind of interesting. I've had conversations with, like, Clint Smith, and he had the opportunity to actually go work for Glock back when in the 80s, like when this first came out, maybe not necessarily maybe their director of training or something like that, but I know he went and did that with H&K for a while, like developed their curriculum, those kind of things. And he's always said, like, maybe I should have went the other route, right? Like, just because of the amount of money he could have made off of the whole Glock thing at the time,
yep.
In the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
So some of the key innovations, which we now see everybody copying, polymer frame, first widely successful use of high-strength polymer for the entire receiver, making the pistol lighter, more corrosion-resistant, and cheaper to manufacture than traditional all-steel and alloy-framed handguns. A striker-fired action with a consistent trigger pull, safe action system. We'll talk a little bit about that after the break, but no external hammer, three internal passive safeties, and a trigger pull that remain the same for every shot. And a simpler modular construction, only 34 parts in total in the original design, emphasizing reliability, the maintenance, and high capacity 17-plus rounds of 9x19 Parabellum, the War Maker. All right, large, well whatever that, man, I don't know, I'll just shut up. Large magazine capacity in a compact ergonomic package. Okay, so anyways, we got to go into a break, and when we come back from this break, we're going to continue on this conversation. I'd like to just pull out a couple things about gas and Glock there real quick, and also talk about the safe action thing, because it's not safe in the traditional sense. It relies more on proper trigger discipline as well. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with Shooter's Corner here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt. Well, Cindy's just kind of sitting in the weeds watching. She's being a sniper. But anyways, yeah, we'll be right back after this break. 97.5, 660 AM.
You find your calm and steady out on the trail, wherever Alaska's wilderness calls you, and you keep answering that call. Every time, the next hunt, the next fishing trip, or camping with the family. Living in Alaska gives you the opportunity to explore. Finding your Alaska is a journey that will always lead you just beyond your next campsite. Frontier Outfitters is here, so you can be there. Alaskan proven equipment, the brands you trust. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hey Fairbanks, Bryant from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work truck set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck-grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
KFAR weather.
High of 53 today, under mainly cloudy skies, easterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 34 tonight. Highs level off around 59 tomorrow, partly cloudy. Daytime highs approaching 55 Saturday, with a chance for scattered rain showers. Slight chance of rain, 54 on Sunday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're here with Shooter's Corner with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska. We just got done talking about the significant emotional event of April 30th, 1981, when Gasping Glock filed the Austrian patent for the Glock 17 pistol. That is right, ladies and gentlemen, April 30th, today, 1981, in the year of our Lord, Gasping Glock. Let us free. But why was this patent revolutionary? Well, does Gasping Glock, then 51 years old and previously known for manufacturing knives, shovels, and other military equipment. Matt, have you ever seen their shovels?
I have not. I didn't even know they made that, but I might buy one just to frame it.
Yeah, I've got a Glock knife. You got a Glock knife?
A knife? You know, I think I do, actually. It's probably one of my tough boxes, but I remember a Glock logo on a knife.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. They don't go off by themselves, so another benefit.
Another win for Glock, another loss for SIG.
Yeah, that's why they don't make knives.
Bunch of nerds.
And other military equipment, obviously, had no prior experience designing firearms. Austrian Army requested a new service pistol in the early 1980s. Glock developed a pistol in roughly 18 months. I don't think anybody can develop anything in 18 months anymore. Not with all the rules and stuff. Winning the military contract in 1982, the design simplicity, reliability, it could fire after being submerged in mud or water, and High Capacity magazine made it an immediate success. Block 17 entered commercial production in 1982 to 1983 and reached the U.S. market in the mid-1980s. It sparked the Wonder 9 revolution, popularized polymer-framed striker fire pistols, and influenced nearly every major manufacturer, Sig Sauer, Smith & Wesson, M&P, and Heckler & Koch. Today, Glock pistols dominate law enforcement and civilian markets globally with tens of millions produced. Kind of alluded to this just before the break, but Glock calls their guns a safe action. It does require proper trigger discipline because it doesn't have a manual safe in that context. But it's always emphasized that the trigger finger should remain off the trigger until ready to shoot. Would you agree? I agree. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are before you made the decision to fire, right? But in essence, the Glock Safe Action system combines the speed and simplicity of a single-action pistol with multiple layers of internal automatic safeties, creating what Glock describes as a revolutionary approach to safe, fast, and reliable handgun operation. Amazing! It remains one of the most influential firearm trigger designs of the modern era, the one to which everybody likes to copy. The finger rest. I thought this was interesting. Squared off on the front of the Glock trigger guard serves a specific ergonomic and control-related purpose rooted in late 20th century shooting techniques. Matt, and I know we've had these conversations with shooters that come to our ACHP class and stuff like that, and you'll see quite a few, mostly gentlemen, who will take their support and trigger finger, or index finger, I should say, and put it on the front of that trigger guard because it's serrated. It's a nice little resting position, if you will. And we always tend to correct them a little bit and maybe say, hey, you might want to relook at that grip a little bit. So
yeah, it's a pretty big constant that we see happen, which, I mean, all things considered, if your grip is going to be wrong, that might be one of the best wrong grips you could do, or outdated.
I agree.
I have seen, not in classes up here, but I've seen twice, which it's weird that it happened twice, and I'd love to never see it again, but someone with both index fingers in the trigger guard pulling the trigger at the same time, and they didn't realize they were even doing it. So over the trigger guard, I'll take it. We can work on that. In the trigger guard, that's a little weird.
Trigger fingers.
Yeah.
I like the redundancy. I can see it.
You know how we always two is one, one is none?
Yeah, maybe they've had too many of those dreams where their gun just doesn't go off, their trigger finger doesn't work. So they're like, oh, maybe I need to use two.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. It's just a 90-pound trigger pull, and they're really just trying to get that shot off.
I think for the edumacation of everybody, though, I think it's important that we understand why it is there. The placement of that was meant to provide the additional leverage and help apply that downward pressure and forward pressure to help control muzzle flip. Because remember, at that time, pretty much the shooting industry was dominated, and training was dominated by the Weaver stance.
Yep.
Right? In which the support hand pulls rearward and provides that isometric tension, right? So kind of that push-pull philosophy. And so their support hand index finger would be on that forward portion of the trigger guard and then basically be pressing back on that to help provide that isometric tension because your firing hand is driving the gun forward. I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that. But here's one thing that it did prevent. Do you happen to know?
No, I don't. What is it?
What happens if you shoot a lot of Glocks? What happens to the knuckle on your index finger of your support hand?
Oh, it gets worn out.
It's a Glock knuckle.
Yeah.
Right?
You got a nice deep callus.
Yeah, women love men that have Glock knuckles.
Yeah, it's like corn for your fingers.
Yeah, yeah, it just shows that you're a man.
Hand bunions.
So the texture surface provides that grip traction, right? Especially with gloves, sweaty hands. But I thought that was pretty interesting doing research on that, the way that trigger guard was designed and why it had that little shelf up there because of those reasons. So, pretty cool, I thought. All right, let's get into our editorial for the day because some interesting stuff happened on April 25th. And, I've been preaching for the last couple of weeks now, hey, maybe this, the government shouldn't have guns, by the way, why do they want to take away our rifles and a bunch of other stuff? But nonetheless, I thought it was interesting. I did watch a video early this morning and it was about why the British government want. Oh, Matt, I gotta digress just a second.
Okay.
Did you happen to watch everybody stand up and applaud King Charles?
Yeah, a little weird.
All the people that were like, no kings.
Well, then it was funny. People are commenting saying, oh, look at two kings together. You can't teach critical thinking skills.
You can teach CRT, though.
That is true. Anyways.
So Saturday night, April 25th, the Washington Hilton hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner, an event meant to celebrate press freedom. Instead, it became the scene of a third major assassination attempt on President Trump. 31-year-old Cole Tomas Allen from Torrance, California. And I'll only say his name because I think it's important that people know what a chucklehead is. With a shotgun, a semi-automatic pistol, and knives, he opened fire, hitting a Secret Service officer in the chest. Thankfully, the officer's ballistic vest saved his life. Agents quickly subdued Allen, and President Trump, the First Lady, the Vice President, and other officials were evacuated safely. This wasn't some random act. Authorities say Allen left writings clearly stating his intent to target Trump administration officials. He's now facing federal charges, including the attempted assassination of the president. Here's the hard truth that drives this event home. No amount of elite security can guarantee perfect safety. Even at a high-profile gathering packed with Secret Service, a determined attacker nearly breached the ballroom. I don't think he would have necessarily got in there, but the fact that he was on a dead run, I mean, he had intent for sure, right?
The fact that he even got close enough to the building with everything is where, like, you know, it, obviously it's not a great day when that happens, but the fact that he got that close and then something happened and then someone stopped, that's where my my concern is, like, really raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even at a high-profile gathering packed with Secret Service, a determined attacker nearly breached the ballroom. Law enforcement did their job, but response time has limits, as we well know. That's exactly why the founders gave us the Second Amendment. An armed, responsible citizenry isn't just a right. It's an extra layer of protection when government security can't be everywhere at once. Predictably, some will use this tragedy to push for more gun control, claiming it's about public safety. But let's be real. Allen ignored every existing law. More restrictions on law-abiding gun owners wouldn't have stopped him. It'd only leave people more vulnerable. Meanwhile, the same politicians pushing those restrictions surround themselves with armed security at taxpayers' expense. They understand the value of armed protection. They just don't want you to have it. This attack should end the debate once and for all. The government and law enforcement should not be the only ones with firearms. Second Amendment exists precisely to prevent any monopoly on force. It protects our freedom to defend ourselves, our families, and our freedoms when seconds count and help is minutes away. We condemn political violence without exception, but we also refuse to let tragedies like this erode our constitutional rights. True safety comes from prosecuting criminals, securing our borders, addressing mental health, and preserving the God-given right of self-defense. The founders knew what they were doing. Saturday night just proved them right again. You know, one of the things I thought, I did a little history research and found it interesting that there was a lot of people in the British government back during Lexington, Concord, you know, our whole 1776 era that really wanted to have a gun registry. Because if they knew where the guns were, then they could come and take them. They literally said that out and spelled that out. Do your own research. You'll see. And that's one of the reasons why it's incredibly important. And Matt, you can talk about this with that whole ATF thing. They wanted to have forever records.
Yep.
During the Biden administration, they said, oh, you know, the company or whatever, they can destroy, you know, the 4473s can be destroyed after 20 years. Then it was like 30, and then Biden comes in, oh, no, they need to be kept forever. Why? That's what we consider to be a registry. Like, they will then know where that gun goes.
Yep, exactly.
And so that's why I think one of the things, one of the points that you had mentioned earlier was the simple fact that this current administration is like, no, that is exactly what Congress didn't want to have done. That's exactly what we don't want to have done in this country, period, because Australia and some other countries are a perfect example of what happens when you have registries and then gun confiscation comes into play. But so that would be a win if they came out and said, oh, by the way, like, there's no more 4473s can be destroyed immediately after the NICS exemption or the NICS clearance is approved. As of right now, at least if I remember correctly, all the 4473s, even if a company goes out of business, has to be sent to a repository, right?
Yep.
In West Virginia. And then what do they do with them when they get them done? They digitize them. I think the last count was like, what, 982 million records have been digitized.
Jeez.
When you digitize something, you just put it in a searchable database.
Even if you think you deleted it, it's still, you can still pull it. There's no getting rid of it.
Oh, once it's in electronic format, there is no getting rid of it.
Nope. It's always there. There's a footprint.
Yeah. Post pictures on Facebook, it's a forever file. I don't care if you delete it, it's there forever. Somebody's got it. A classic example of that, I mean, not necessarily at the government level, but what do they call it, like Wayback? There's a Wayback website where you can go look at
it. Yeah.
Anyways, we got to go into our mandatory break here. We'll come back after this, and we'll continue on our conversation. We'll talk about Matt's self-defense stats here. Shooter's Corner, 97.5, 650 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
From the Satellite West Studio, satellite-based voice communications, you're listening to KFAR.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. Congress is a step closer to ending the nation's longest government shutdown after the House successfully voted to pass a funding bill for the Department of Homeland Security. House Speaker Mike Johnson.
We got the budget resolution passed. This is very, very important because that will ensure that border security and immigration enforcement will continue today and well into the future.
This comes after an almost 80-day standoff between Republicans and Democrats over reforms to ICE and Customs and Border Protection. The suspected gunman in Saturday's attack at the White House Correspondents' Center is going to be held without bail pending trial. U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Jeanine Pirro, tells Fox there's no question this guy was intending to kill.
This defendant was calculated. He was premeditated. He had every intention of killing the president and anyone who got in his way.
The 31-year-old California man faces at least three federal charges. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly awarded a meaty $17.4 million contract for the planned animal shelter to Alaska-based Watterson Construction Company in the wee hours of Friday morning. According to borough staff, Watterson came in $10 million underbid for the animal shelter. The project had a $29.25 million construction budget, including a $2.4 million contingency reserve. Corey Beal, the borough's chief procurement officer, said the new shelter will be a single-story, 22,000-square-foot facility designed to serve current and future borough residents and animal control needs. Beal said Watterson's bid includes the base bid plus four additive alternatives or additional features. Beal said Watterson's bid was about 5% lower than the next highest bidder, Cornerstone General Contractors, which bid $18.32 million. Alcan Builder submitted the highest bid at $27.3 million, about $520,000 above the borough engineer's estimate.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day, but it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts? We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Auto Trim Design has it all, from radios, speakers, amplifiers, moose lights, running boards, and step bars, to WeatherTech floor liners and mud flaps. And don't forget about the CompuStar remote starts, Arctic polyurea spray and bed liners, back racks, and ladder racks. Auto Trim Design also has Lear and ARE toppers and smart caps. All this and more at Auto Trim Design under the big American flag.
Customized by Auto Trim.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Hello, listeners. Ooh, I'm not hearing anything on my end. What is going on? Chuck, you there?
Hi there.
Oh, okay, perfect. There we go. Thought it was my end. I wasn't hearing myself either.
I never hear myself. part of the complaint.
Oh,
all right.
No.
So anyway, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck City of Madden, Shooter's Corner, 97.5, 660 AM. Once again, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in 458-TALK, 458-TALK. Hey, so we just got done talking about the, you know, rights for the not for me or the know me, and yeah, and Matt, go on, brother, what you got?
So I've got, excuse me, I've got a few things here. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is statistical data showing the differences in usage for pistol, rifle, and shotguns. What's being used the most based off of the FBI, DGU. And I think it's really interesting because even doing this research, like going into it, knowing that pistols were going to be used more than anything else, but seeing the actual percentage wise of the rifle and shotgun side of it's actually pretty cool. So comprehensive national statistics specifically breaking down defensive gun uses by these types of firearm types on a large scale estimates of DGUs, which DGUs are defensive gun uses. These have all been pulled from surveys like the National Crime Victimization Survey, which is the NCVS. Usually it yields lower figures around the 60 to 100,000 per year. And then, you know, all this studying includes private surveys like Kleck Gertz. But going into these breakdowns, just a broad overview. So justifiable homicides by firearm type. This is from the FBI's statistics, and this is for the five-year period of 2012 to 2016. And really quick before we get into that, the reason why you'll see some of these statistics are usually pretty late, dated almost 10 years, in this case 10 to 14 years, it's because it does take so long to compile all this stuff because you're having to work with different departments, you're having to pull from different states. It takes so long to get a study done. And I know Chuck knows just as well as I do how long it takes the federal government to get a printer working. So you can imagine pulling years of data. But for that five-year period, there were 1,233 justifiable homicides involving firearms. So with that, handguns make up the largest portion, which is 76.6% or 944 cases. Shotguns come in at 4.6%, which is 57 cases, and rifles right behind it at 4.2 with 52 cases. Firearm types not stated, that's at 14.2, that's 175. So I imagine it's going to be in the realm of muskets or something random like that. And then there is a 0.4% that's just unaccounted for entirely. What I think is extremely interesting with that is with the relevance of shotguns and rifles, I think it comes with obviously where you're living, what's more easily accessible, as well as what your price point is. So handguns being the cheapest across the board, and I would say 90% of most pistol purchase cases, that's going to make sense as to why that's there. And then shotguns, again, why that'd be the second thing up. You know, a lot of people are raised on shooting dove, duck, whatever, and they're more comfortable with that. Again, as well as they have a really nice price point. You're usually sitting at anywhere from $200 to $500 for like the most bare bones shotgun you can get. And then rifles, you can start to pick it up unless you go to PSA and get a full rifle on one of their Patriot discounts for like $300 that, you know, you're taking a shot in the dark as to whether it's going to work or not. Rifles tend to stick around the $700 to $800 range just for the rifle itself for entry fee. So it makes sense as to why shotguns are outweighing rifles. But I was very blown away at the fact that rifles and shotguns were so close with only a five case difference between the two of them. The 2021 National Firearms Survey is one of the most recent sources with a direct breakdown of handguns being used. So this is privatized. This is a privatized survey. Handguns being used 65.99% of defensive incidents. Now, it does not provide a clean split for the remaining 34% between rifles and shotguns as well as other firearms, but rifles and shotguns are implied to make up a smaller share. Most incidents, 82%, of those cases, that was there were no shots fired, meaning this was a this wasn't a justifiable homicide. This was someone had broken into the house, or something was happening where you needed to defend yourself, and it was just the threat factor alone of having a weapon pointed at someone that the person was able to back off from it. Again, I guarantee you there's way more cases of this happening out there. They're just not getting pulled because, you know, sometimes someone could break in, and depending on where you're at, especially up here, you know, you're 5 hours away from the police. There's no point in calling because it's going to be just a waste of everyone's time. But
well, let's talk about some of these numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
You were able to extrapolate here real quick. So, first of all, we know that handguns are a weapon of convenience.
Yep.
Right. Easily concealable. I mean, I can walk through most stores in Alaska either with open carry or even concealed carry, which is my preferred technique. But nobody sees it. Versus slinging a freaking Benelli M4 around my neck and walking through Fred Meyer's with it.
Yep.
Right? I mean, which one's going to cause the most chaos, if you will, or the most calls, right? Definitely the handgun is obviously the weapon of convenience. Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting here is you said a tiny fraction of total DGUs, defensive gun uses, most involve no shots fired, no fatality. Estimates suggest 80% involve no discharge. That's one of the things I've been teaching for years, like ever since we started teaching the Alaska Concealed Handgun class, like that whole avoid, de-escalate, retreat, engage, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, the minute you present a gun into the equation, it de-escalates. The perpetrator leaves. Like if I have a firearm and I like have it at the low ready at the minimum and I say, get out of my house, and that person leaves, that's a win. I didn't have to fire a shot, right?
Yep.
But then what do? I immediately get on the phone so I can list myself as a complaint slash victim, right? I mean, I need to call law enforcement immediately. Okay. So I thought that was interesting. It kind of substantiates what I've been saying and preaching all along. 80% of the time, they de-escalate when a firearm is presented into the equation. I thought what else was interesting is the private survey where it says handguns were used in 65.99, 66% of defensive incidents, does not provide a clean split for the remaining rifle, shotguns, and other firearms, but rifle, shotguns are implied to make up the smaller share. Yes. I would say that shotguns tend to make up more than the rifle does because most people don't have an aversion to a rifle than they do a shotgun. Like, some people have been raised with, like, you know, bird hunting or grandpa's bird hunting or some relative has been bird hunting. They don't view a shotgun as a weapon of war as much as they do an M4 carbine. Although the M4 carbine is much more efficient at self-defense at any range. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think with the shotgun, too, I mean, you look at it and it's not necessarily a terrifying thing to see when someone's holding. But whether you grew up hunting or you grew up watching movies,
looking down that 1-inch bore.
Yeah, you look through. You know, it looks like a golf ball penetrated some steel. But you look at it, and you know, you got movies, hunting, just shooting in general, and then video games. When you think about what's going to produce the most amount of damage, effectively, I think generally speaking, for most people who don't dive into the ballistics and the terminal ballistics and all that stuff, they just think shotgun, which is pretty appropriate, all things considered. I have different rounds I can use, or different styles of shot. I can use bird, buck, slug, and then you can use random things. People make flechette, whatever. But when I think of a shotgun, I'm thinking I'm either going to take out a bird or I'm going to inflict the most damage possible at a close range and have a more area of lenience for if my shot isn't exactly perfect, because I am pushing out, unless I'm shooting a slug, I am pushing out a lot of something really fast, and it's going to spread a decent amount within a short amount of range. That's, you know, and I think that's why that might be scary, especially the racking of the shotgun. You know, I hate to say it, but if I hear a shotgun rack, if I broke into someone's house, I could hear a slide rack on a pistol, I could hear a bolt release on a rifle, and knowing what those sound like, I understand what's there, and I'm going to leave anyway. But if I don't know, I'm an uninformed burglar, I could hear those things and think someone opened a door, someone did, you know, something else. They're not keen to that. But the shotgun, I think because it's such a staple in our culture, I think that is just ingrained in people's head to go, ooh, bye.
Yeah, you got to be careful. There's, you know, not getting too far down a rabbit hole on the shotgun thing, but, you know, a lot of people have that misconception that if I just pointed down the hallway, it's going to spread, you know, the width of the hallway only,
yeah,
and then take out whatever's down there. That is not the case.
No.
You literally need to pattern your shotgun,
yep,
to make a determination on what the ranges are going to be. Because if you get outside of that effective range, like that, if you start putting rounds outside of the C zone on a man-sized target, then it's time to do what we call a select slug drill.
Yep.
And then transition over to a slug. Or get really good ammo, like a Federal Flight Control 8 pellet, right? Double op buck. And you can push that sucker all the way out to like 25 yards,
yeah,
with a good gun.
Oh, yeah.
A Remington 870 or something like that. It's phenomenal in the capabilities that it has. All right, we got to go into our last break, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All right, awesome. Well, we'll go into our last break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue on this conversation about defensive gun use and how it can be implemented into your own home self-defense plan just based on statistics and everything. And we'll talk a little bit more about those as well. So stay tuned here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner, 97.5, 660 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it have a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 53. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows level off around 34. Tonight, mainly cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 59. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner, 97.5, 660 AM, in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska, where it's still in the 40s and the snow is slowly melting. All right. So, Matt and I have been talking about defensive gun uses in relationship to the pistol, rifle, and shotgun. Matt, I think for the last segment, if you'd like, let's talk about the pros and cons. Because as we know, no single firearm is perfect for every situation. And we've talked about this in classes before, like mission dictates equipment, right? And we know that most people, if they're using a firearm for self-defense, home use in particular, a lot of times they might just be in their skivvies.
Yep.
You know, foot bailing out, you know, in their birthday suit, and they're just going to fight what's on the gun. So, you know, I don't think a lot of people are throwing on all their body armor and a kit and everything else if they hear something go bump in the night down by their kid's bedroom.
If it was a perfect world and I lived in a mansion and there was enough distance between me and the intruder, I'd put whatever protection I want on. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. We talk about this all the time. Like, you don't have that option. We're not, you know, trillionaires. You wouldn't even need to at that point. You'd have to have guards. But yeah, you're going to use what's exactly...
Like our politicians do?
No, they would never do such things. They would never try to abolish your rights while also do as I say, not as I doing around.
All right. Yeah, so handguns. What do you think? Advantages?
Yeah, so as we said before, like not every firearm is perfect for every person or situation. So handguns. So the advantages with handguns, I think overall the most... argued about case, right? Well, not really argued about, but I say agreed upon, is that they're highly maneuverable in tight spaces and around corners. You can use a pistol one-handed. You know, gives you the option to leave your other hand free, holding a phone, talking with the police, opening your doors, maybe holding onto your family members as you're maneuvering to a safer location. The list are kind of endless on that one. The other thing with that, too, is it's compact size. They're lightweight, makes them easy to store securely and quick access safes, retrieve quickly, as well as it's not really weighing down your pants, depending on, you know, how you're carrying, if you're carrying. They are easy to carry, keep on your person, again, for immediate access, concealing outside of your home, open carrying maybe in your home if that's, you know, how you want to do it, whatever. Please don't, but, you know, sure. It does have lower recoil and common defense calibers, so like 9mm, 380, something like that. Again, those are more common than not, 10mm, 40, and 45. It starts to get heavier, but it's allowing you for a faster follow-up shot for a lot of users. There is a higher practical capacity in modern semi-automatics, so anywhere from 15 to 18 and over rounds, compared to most shotguns, which usually anywhere from 4 to 12, depending on how long of a tube you have. And then, like we mentioned before, they're relatively inexpensive to train with due to cheaper ammunition. So you can, you know, buy whatever Winchester white box, if that's what you like or your firearm likes. And it's extremely cheap to go out and just get comfortable with your weapon, understanding where your shot placement is, where your point of aim is leading you into your point of impact and all that stuff. Do you have anything to add on that one, Chuck?
I would say just one other thing. When you talked about relatively inexpensive to train. So there are some training adapters that are out there for rifles as well. So
yes.
I have a couple of the 22 subcal adapters that you can just drop right into an AR. Work actually very well. And surprisingly, even though they're in single shot mode, I'll share this as a training tip for people. I thought that was pretty good. You put your suppressor on your rifle, and then you use that subcal adapter with a 22 subsonic. Holy cow, that thing's so quiet.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
quieter
yeah.
Than an air rifle. Like,
if you haven't shot a suppressed 22 with a subsonic load, you're missing out. You just hear the action moving. Like, it is crazy. And then you can hear the impact. Life. Yeah, it's just. It is funny. Yeah.
All right. So, some of the disadvantages.
So, disadvantages for pistols. Overall, I would say it's a harder to shoot platform. Under stress due to short sight radius, so you have a smaller margin for error than you do with a rifle because I am bringing those sights in closer. It might be a little harder to aim if you're using iron sights. Red dots kind of takes that away, but it is light. You are having to use two or one-handed, but if you haven't trained with it enough, you're kind of shaky. You're getting that Michael J. Fox shake going on, and your shots are not going to be as accurate as you want them to. Lower individual stopping power per shot compared to long guns. Even though modern defensive ammunition really does help, you still are getting to a point of diminishing returns when you're trying to really pack it in there.
Yeah, because I think people need to understand, though, that handguns put holes in people, rifles put holes through people, shotguns take chunks off people.
Famous words of Clint Smith, our prophet.
Exactly.
But you do have, again, like I said, you're more prone to user error. Grip, aim, recoil management for novices tends to be a big factor as to why people stop shooting pistols and they just stick with rifle and shotgun. And then they'll tell everyone, I'm good with it. But once they get the training, they understand it is actually fairly easy. You just have to be trained correctly. And then one of the things that's in here, there is a greater risk of overpenetration with certain loads, though, again, understanding what your defensive rounds are for, what training rounds are for, and everything like that. If you're doing the right thing and ensuring you're feeding your weapon the correct ammunition, you can mitigate that. But that is one of the issues that you can come up with that. But that's what I have for the disadvantages for pistols.
Now, just one last thing on pistols, though. A lot of people ask us in our classes as well, Matt. Like, what caliber should I use? And I would say that most of the industry pretty much sticks with 380 being maybe the minimum for self-defense ammunition.
Yep.
And that's because it's essentially a 9mm short,
yep,
if you will. Kind of like how the 40 Smith & Wesson is a 10mm short. 380 is a 9mm short, probably the minimum I would submit to you, though, the way most handguns are designed nowadays, you can easily get away with a 9mm. But if you have arthritis or your hands can't handle quite that recoil, maybe go with a 380.
Yeah, there's a little...
And I know we've talked about this in other shows as well, is 22 long rifles making some leaps and bounds in the defensive ammo world as well. And if that's all you can handle is maybe like a Glock 44 or a 22 handgun or something like that, and you put Federal Punch in it or Spear Gold Dot 22 long rifle in there, like, and you hit center mass, look, bottom line is this. Accuracy counts in a gunfight. And if you punch somebody center mass in the heart 10 times rapidly, like, I don't know, it's probably going to make them change their life choices.
Yep, I was always taught, and I always teach, you know, viewer discretion be advised, but my end goal, right, is I'm not a doctor. I don't know what this person is capable of. Everyone has seen the videos out there, people being hopped up on 1,000 things and being shot 15 times and they're still walking. Your shot placement extremely matters, but I was always taught you want their sternum to touch their spine and then put both of them on the ground. That way you are taking out their heart, and you are also taking out their ability to walk and possibly attack you more. It does sound gruesome, but you are firing a weapon. You are defending yourself. It's not going to be a walk in a garden.
Yeah, I think it's important that people understand as well that that person picked you as a victim that day.
Yep.
You should be incredibly upset, pissed off at the world because of that.
They thought your life was less important than anything else, so it's you have to prove them wrong.
Yeah. All right. So, moving on.
Yep. So, with we do have only a few minutes here remaining, so I'll just kind of get through this. So, for rifles, all right, advantages. Excellent control and accuracy under stress due to a longer sight radius, shoulder to stock, multiple points of contact with your cheek weld, shoulder, hands, depending on if you're in the prone or maybe you're shooting off of, you know, your countertop, whatever. You're having a lot of points of contact that are really going to help balance out how you're shooting. You have lower recoil in most defensive calibers, so 223.556, 300 blackout, something like that, you're really allowed to get an extremely fast follow-up shot, so you can continue to suppress the engagement or the assailant coming towards you and threatening you. Like Chuck said, you know, you're gonna, in a defensive scenario, you're not gonna have time to put all your stuff on. So if I have a pistol, I'm usually at 18 to 22 rounds. If I have a rifle, 9 out of 10 times I have a 30-round magazine in there. So I'm already outmatching what my pistol is, so I'm imagining I can outmatch them unless they have some Draco with a drum. But you do have a good balance of stopping power and reduced over-penetration risk when using the appropriate ammo. We keep saying that, appropriate ammo. You can't just go buy anything and think it's going to work for everything. You have to understand what you're using. Then you get into the mounting situation with rifles, and they're 10 times easier than pistols. A lot of times you just slap it on, screw it on, and you're good. But you can mount lights, optics, accessories, and a lot of the times being able to mount it properly but easier on that weapon is going to allow these shooters to engage targets more quickly and be a little more accurate. And then they are effective at longer distances, and even indoors, they'll be more effective at those indoor long-range engagements that you could consider them, depending on what the building is and all that.
Yeah, I would say one thing on that, though, when you said mounting lights, optics, accessories, like, be careful. If it's for home defensive use, you don't want that thing the weight of a Kreuzer weapon system.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, just all you need is a high-capacity magazine and maybe a light.
Yeah, you don't need a flare for your rifle walking around your house. It's cool to see in thermal, but at the same time, if my weapon's 20, you're right. If I feel like I'm walking around with an M60, I'm not really benefiting myself.
Yeah, exactly.
But some disadvantages too. I think this will be the last thing we can touch base on. But you will require two hands to operate effectively, reducing flexibility in dynamic situations. Again, if you've trained, that's not really an issue. They are longer and generally bulkier than a pistol, making them slower to maneuver in tight spaces. Higher potential for over-penetration compared to shotguns with certain loads. Heavier and less convenient for quick bedside access or daily carry. Again, storing it properly, not just on the ground. And then there is a much louder report, and typically you're going to see a larger muzzle flash indoors if you're not using it suppressed. And even then, your first round with a suppressor, you're going to have a first round pop. So you're still going to be a flash, still going to be pretty loud until the gases start to accumulate in your can.
All right. Well, that's our show for the day.
Walked right into it.
All right, awesome. Hey, maybe when we come back next week, we can talk about shotguns or something.
I think that'd be good. I think that'd be an overall really good segment.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, just remember, active self-protection class, June, coming up. It's on our website, C4 Training Group.